What's up, capitalists? Well, not the stock market, not crypto, but there's a reason for that, and we're gonna see how Bitcoin is gonna get us through this nonsense. Hey, I'm Nate Houseman, and I'm your guide to the 21st century. In this video, we're gonna look at the stock market. We're gonna look at the Federal Reserve. We're gonna look at inflation. We're gonna look at the price of Bitcoin. And we're going to look at some very bullish news about Bitcoin and hopefully find a reason to hope. So if you find this content valuable, please share it. Give it a thumbs up on whatever your platform you're on. And hit the subscribe button and the notification bell. So, and we'll also another thing you can do to support the program is go to my website, natehouseman.net. Click on the Resources tab, the Work With Me tab, or the Store tab, and avail yourself of some cool items for sale. And another thing you can do is go to my Locals page, link in the description. Locals is a free speech version of both Patreon and Discord. So I've got a group here, and I've got some exclusive content. So if you join my membership, as soon as this page loads up, I've got so many browsers open, it's silly. But you can become a channel supporter and get access to exclusive content. I've got an exclusive video up already that I recorded Sunday about, you know, news articles, news stories that I didn't get to in my normal videos. So take advantage. So let's talk about inflation. This is from Coindesk.com. The Fed can't whip inflation alone. So Wednesday's U.S. inflation numbers came in higher than Wall Street economists' expectations, but about the same as everyone else's. And the overall consumer price index, or CPI for short, rising a shocking 9.1% over the past 12 months. Total inflation surged in June, up a dramatic 1.3% on a month-by-month basis. Financial markets dropped in the news, but fairly modestly. The Dow Jones and NASDAQ composite indexes were both off less than 1% Wednesday morning. That's partly because the resident Biden White House already signaled a high print yesterday, nudging equity indexes down a bit under 1% before the July 11th close. So the article goes on to say that inflation is due to not just money printing, it's also due to the prices of commodities, mainly oil, and then how that affects like transportation, shipping, and supply chains. But there's also, you know, food, raw materials, copper, lumber. And inflation's hurting everyone. And the Fed is supposedly trying to reel it back in. But we're going to see how that's, you know, inflation is baked in, is a feature, not a bug of the central bank, the Federal Reserve central bank system. Certain things started happening in 1913. That's when the Federal Reserve was foisted upon the American people. It was dreamt up by the bankers of the day, and it was sold to unsuspecting members of Congress and President Wilson, and signed into law. And the country's basically been in debt ever since, because the Federal Reserve, in conjunction with the Treasury, prints money and loans it to the government and the banks and charges interest on it. That interest is a killer. It keeps us in perpetual cycle of debt, and really debt slavery. Please watch my video on titled "There's More Debt Than Money," and it's gonna blow your mind. If you got paid recently in either for your work or for some product or service that you sold, there's probably only a 1 in 8 chance that you were paid with actual money. There's a 7 in 8 chance that you were paid by someone else's IOU. It's that bad. So the Federal Reserve is supposedly, you know, trying to stop inflation by raising interest rates. And we see from this article on Forbes, as soon as it pulls up, how does the stock market perform when interest rates rise? It's a kind of a basic explanatory article for the layman. When inflation runs too hot for asset bubbles and asset bubbles get out of hand, like we saw with the stock market from 2020 up till now, the Fed raises interest rates to cool things off. Higher rates ripple throughout the entire economy. Mortgages, car loans, and business loans become more expensive, slowing down cash flows. Yeah, it becomes more risky to borrow money. This can lead businesses to amend or pause plans for growth. In the stock market, higher rates can incentivize investors to sell assets and to take profits, especially in times like now, when there's been a few years of double-digit percentage returns on stocks. As you might guess, investor decisions like this can lower stock prices, individually at least, if not across major market sectors. And it goes on to say that, you know, growth stocks, which includes tech stocks, they tend to be hit hardest when interest rates increase, whereas older companies, as well as commodities like oil and lumber and even gold, they're kind of treated as more of a hedge against, more of a safe haven asset. When interest rates rise, it becomes riskier to use leverage in your trading. And that's been happening in crypto for like the longest time. And that's one reason why the cryptocurrency market is in such bad shape. In this article, we come back to CoinDesk, and I'm going to read this article in its entirety. Crypto is trying out traditional finance's failures at hyperspeed, but it's going to be fine. The author is George Kaloudis, and he says, "The last time I wrote about a stablecoin, it failed spectacularly. So when a colleague of mine suggested I read about MakerDAO's proposal to invest in U.S. treasuries to back its collateralized stablecoin DAI, I was reminded of the power I wield. I'm completely joking, by the way. But while we're on the topic of spectacular failure, we should talk about spectacular failure. Just 2 weeks ago, this newsletter suggested that opaque, intertwined platforms with excessive leverage were a danger to crypto investors. And leverage is when you borrow money to make a trade, either to buy more shares or crypto than you normally would, or to short when the assets in a bear market. Excessive leverage were a danger to crypto investors. That was in the shadows of the hedge fund Three Arrows Capital's insolvency. And now Celsius and Voyager, two retail focused yield generating platforms, have put together restructuring plans. So Celsius and Voyager, they're two cryptocurrency exchanges that also lend their users money. It's a way for the investors to make another type of investment besides, you know, trading or buying and selling. But now people have defaulted on those loans, and these platforms are plain out of luck. They put together restructuring plans, which is what you do when you're screwed. Voyager even declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy, the good kind of bankruptcy for the record, if there is such a thing, proving that crypto is hellbent on playing out the mistakes of traditional finance at hyperspeed. What's more, blockchain.com also stands to lose $127 million from lending to Three Arrows. There are a handful of other not-so-great crypto things happening right now, which we'll get into, but it's all going to be somehow fine, and maybe more. The yield curve inverted this week. The yield curve inverting is often treated as a warning indicator for a recession, so that isn't great on the surface. And what is a yield curve? What does that mean? In plain English, the U.S. federal government sells bonds, also called treasuries, to investors like you to fund all the stuff they do. Those treasuries, in turn, pay you an interest rate or yield over a period of time. At the end of that period of time, the original amount is returned to the investor. If treasuries sound like loans, that's because they are. The amount investors would expect to make on these treasuries is higher the longer the loan is. That makes sense. Your money is locked up longer, so in exchange for that risk, you get more yield. So then, if you plot the length of the loan on the x-axis against yield, you'd get a logarithmic looking growth curve. And you can see this if you're watching the video. If you're listening on the podcast, there's the y-axis is the yield, the x-axis is the maturity or time, and it kind of like curves little more sharply upward, and then kind of like levels off the higher it gets, higher and farther it gets. Except when the yield curve inverts, which is what happened, which is what just happened. Now, 10-year treasury yields are lower than 2-year treasury yields. Theoretically, this means investors expect longer-term rates to decline. Practically, this means banks, which depend on lending at rates in excess of risk-free rate, to make money, will lend less. This will lead to a slowdown in economic activity, such as life in a debt-based monetary system. Also, a 75 basis point increase to interest rates in July is basically a foregone conclusion at this point. According to the Federal Market Open Committee, the FOMC, June meeting minutes, almost all FOMC members were in favor of a 75 BPS hike. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell told us that a 75-point hike was an unusually large one. 2 months in a row would seem quite unusual, but that's just me. That's the author speaking. All eyes are on July 27th. So it's pretty good, you know, explanation of the yield curve. Miners are also struggling. We touched on how mining companies, those are the people and companies that mine Bitcoin by running computers and solving, you know, cryptographic, you know, equations to generate more Bitcoin. We touched on how mining companies might soon capitulate by selling some of their balance sheet Bitcoins to fund operations as they struggle, given 2022 price performance mentioned in last week's newsletter. And just like that, one of the largest miners, Core Scientific, announced that it sold over 7,000 Bitcoin in June. Core Scientific hasn't performed well in 2022, so it's unsurprising that they had to dip into the treasury a bit. All said, while miner capitulation is viewed as the beginning of a death spiral to zero, since miners are supposed to be the last line of defense, that isn't happening in reality. Core Scientific CEO Mike Leavitt assured investors the company is focused on executing its plans, and the sale was just an exercise in maintaining a healthy balance sheet. To its credit, Core Scientific didn't have to disclose that it sold anything, given its earnings call isn't until August. The crypto lenders are not having a good time, so this is where we kind of get to the whole leveraging crisis in the crypto markets. Lastly, leverage continues to hurt everyone. The Luna coin collapse led to the Three Arrows capital insolvency, and now we are facing a crypto lender crisis. BlockFi received a structured bailout from FTX, is another crypto trading platform. It's one that I use, and I use that to trade Forex as well. BlockFi received a structured bailout from FTX with what seems to be $250 million in earnout. Celsius halted operations and then announced some restructuring plans, and Voyager did the same but different by declaring bankruptcy. On top of that, it came out on Friday that blockchain.com might lose $270 million from lending to Three Arrows Capital. It's tough sledding out there. The news is still unfolding with all these lenders. In general, this is all not good, but it doesn't feel like the worst is behind us. FTX and its ever-altruistic CEO, Sam Bankman-Fried, is emerging as crypto savior as his or his firm's name has popped up in all discussions around companies who are failing in the embers of the Three Arrows insolvency. So in general, all these things, from an inverted yield curve, higher interest rates, minor capitulation, and multiple crypto lender bankruptcies, are not good. What is going to be the most interesting here is seeing what happens to Bitcoin and crypto during these hard times. Not only is life tough in the crypto world, but macro markers are signaling a recession. Although it was birthed out of a recession, Bitcoin has never lived through one. It will, at the very least, get interesting. Thankfully, or unthankfully, things are happening quicker than the authors used to. The interesting thing is seeing what Bitcoin will do in the times of hard macro times, which is the root of this all. So, a little bit later, we're going to see why Bitcoin is probably, even though it's lost value, it's still a very good hedge against the whole economic system. But we got to talk about wealth inequality and the problem of stagnant wages of workers and the middle class over really since 1971 in the 80s. We have a Forbes article from December of last year. Wealth inequality is on the rise during the pandemic. And there's another article by Forbes written in 2018 that actually explains why wages have been stagnant and the rich have gotten richer for many decades. The article is How to Fix Stagnant Wages, Dump the World's Dumbest Idea. And I'll just scroll down to the bottom of, I'm just going to scroll down to the pertinent section. The fact is that in the 1980s and beyond, public companies, public corporations, began embracing a very different idea as the purpose of a company. The idea of, instead of earning a profit, the idea became that of a corporation is to maximize shareholder value. That is, as executives were compensated massively with stock options to sharpen their focus on increasing shareholder value at the expense of everything else, and activist hedge funds began reinforcing the focus with corporate raids on firms that didn't buy into the doctrine. Public companies began to focus totally on maximizing shareholder value as reflected in the stock market and the stock price. So, you know, most millionaires and billionaires in this country, they tend to be corporate executives. And even though they have salaries, just like, you know, the regular employees do, they're also compensated mostly by stocks and stock options. So their incentive turns away from making money for the company to increasing the stock price. And the article goes on. Previously, firms had sought to balance the needs of all the stakeholders, customers, employees, shareholders, and the community. Workers were valued both as contributors to the gains that had already been made and as the creators of future growth. But once shareholder value thinking took over, workers became seen as expendable commodities, whose training for the future and career development were simply not their problem. No responsibility was felt to those employees who had helped create the wealth of the company. Instead, corporate raiders, who had played no role in creating that wealth, extracted much of the gains, which they then used to conduct more raids. So, and we're going to see why, you know, shareholder value and startup mentality and stock market mentality became such a thing is because of fiat money. First, we got to look at this article that appeared last month in The Atlantic, The End of the Millennial Lifestyle Subsidy. And it goes on to describe how services like Uber and DoorDash and all the gig economy apps that the urban young people use, they've been cheap for a very long time. They've been very affordable. Now that the stock market, all the tech stocks are sliding, they had to become profitable again. So they're charging a lot more. And for a long time, that made life really, really hard for the gig economy workers. And I speak from experience because I drive Uber. I don't drive as much as I used to because of gas prices. But it's a fun way to make a job, but it does put wear and tear on your vehicle. Right now, I also deliver groceries, but I don't, you know, depend on just that. I've got my video channels. I've got my trading strategy. I'm also writing a novel, which, you know, I might mention in the future, talk more about in a future video. But everyone's working harder. They're putting in multiple streams of income because gig economy work doesn't pay and regular work doesn't pay compared to the rate of inflation. This leads us back to a Bitcoin magazine, and they're going to talk about some of the problems with startups, the stock market, and how Bitcoin can actually fix a lot of the problems. So I'm going to read this article in its entirety as well. This article is by Jimmy Song. Startups are a giant fiat game. They're perceived to be the engines of the economy, the drivers of innovation, and the creators of wealth. In reality, they mask the Cantillon effect and make the rich richer while making the poor poorer. They waste money and burn through capital like there's no tomorrow. Startups embody the get-rich-or-die-trying mentality like insecure Hollywood hopefuls. Even the few that make it subsidize their good or service through large infusions of newly printed money, eschewing profits for the prospect of growth. Losing money to add customers is a constant trade-off, with hopes of being able to price out competitors to eventually become monopolies. They all hope to graduate to stock market darlings like Tesla, Amazon, or Alphabet. With large government interventions likely, even the darlings will likely degenerate to zombie companies like IBM, GE, or GM once their fiat-induced monopolistic edges are dulled. Such is the life cycle of fiat companies, which is as depressing as the life of a factory farm chickens, and just about as gross. You wonder why Amazon is such a miserable company to work for? Well, Amazon is being subsidized by, you know, investor capital, by stocks. You know, Bezos and his successor, they don't care about making a profit as much as they do, you know, increasing the stock price. So, and just, you know, and that makes them out of touch with the warehouse workers who, as mentioned in that Forbes article, they get the short end of the stick, along with, you know, delivery drivers and such. This is a hard essay for the author to write, having been a startup veteran of more than 20 years. Yet as I study fiat money and how it changes the incentives everywhere in the economy, I've come to the conclusion that startups are as much a grift benefiting from cantillon effects as investment banks are. They just have the illusion of being more productive because of how busy the people in them are. Company valuations or speculations. There are two ways companies can increase in valuation. The first is the traditional way, which is to make more profits. A larger profit means a larger dividend, making the equity in the company worth more. The price increases in equity are rational, or what we would call having a fundamental basis. Think getting good grades in school because you actually study and know the subject. So, yeah, the traditional way of offering dividends, basically letting investors, stockholders, get a share of your profits. That's what the older traditional companies do, not so much the tech companies and the growth stocks. The second way to increase the valuation is through boosting investor demand. Of course, investor demand with traditional investors is directly correlated to the first metric, increased profits. But this is not the case with most modern investors. Modern investors just want to buy what everyone else wants before they want it. This is what we would call speculation. Think of getting good grades in school because of grade inflation. Speculation is a perception game where valuation increases because of the perceived desirability of the asset. The desirability could be based on fundamentals or based on pictures of a dog. For speculative purposes, it doesn't really matter. Demand for the equity, whatever narrative it is based on, drives the price. So a lot of these, you know, startups, they don't care much about, you know, profitability. They just care on hyping up the story, hyping up the brand, and making everyone think, hey, this is a really cool thing to buy into. Investing has traditionally been based on sound fundamentals. Money was invested for some reasonable return, not based on equity price appreciation. Real returns, like dividends, determined whether money came in. This is how equity pricing used to work. For the past 40 years, this has decidedly not been the way equities have been valued. Amazon has never paid a dividend, for example. It continues to attract investment dollars. It attracts investment because of the narrative and the speculation around the stock. This is what we call a Keynesian beauty contest. The money is invested not for real returns, like coupon payments or dividends, but on equity appreciation. All you do is buy the stock, hoping the stock is worth more in the future, and then you can sell at a profit. Stock purchases are like infomercials now. Way too optimistic sounding and ending in regret. We all know these narratives sound too good to be true, yet perceive other people will buy them anyway and want to get ahead of the crowd. Many such investments have little to no fundamentals, but that doesn't matter if the narrative is good enough to get money in. This is the dominant investment paradigm today because yield has disappeared and price appreciation is the only edge left. The next section is titled Fiat Equity Valuations with No Opportunity Costs. Equity valuation has turned it away from yield, and the culprit, as you might expect, is fiat money. In a hard money system, attracting investment requires a return because the money is scarce. Being scarce, buying equity has opportunity costs. Under a hard money standard, capital demand has to be satisfied from existing stock, as new money can't just be printed. Hence, attracting investment is more difficult, as there are many other investments that someone with money can make. Returns, in other words, have to compensate for the scarcity of money. As a result, equity valuations tend to be based on fundamentals. Under a fiat monetary system, monetary is much more abundant, and that means there's almost no opportunity cost for money. Investment can be financed, which is not really investment at all, but an arbitrage. Savvy investors can get loans at a low rate from a bank and get a higher return through investing in equities of some kind. The difference is their profit, and this is what all fiat investing has become. Every hedge fund, investment bank, and venture capital fund is essentially this exact game of leverage and arbitrage at some level. The money in these funds is an illusion, created ex nihilo in the form of loans and then leveraged into an asset. That's why the crypto markets are dropping so bad, is because all the leverage is drying up because the investors couldn't pay back their loans. The abundance of money means that over time, there's always more money chasing investment opportunities. Attracting investment dollars becomes a much quicker and easier way to increase the valuation of companies than in turning a profit. This is why valuations go way higher during monetary expansion. And that's why tech stocks are dropping harder than anything else, because they're based on fiat rather than sound fundamentals, because the Fed is supposedly fighting inflation. Profit is difficult and requires delivering needed goods and services to the market. Attracting new investment dollars in the fiat monetary system is much easier. The strategy is simple. Hype the equity to the right people and watch the newly printed money roll in. Why sell to the free market when you can sell equity to cantillionaires? Why make a profit? Why make a product when you can pump and dump? Startups are the new money magnets. The abundance of money streams that the game of attracting money is relatively easy. Newly printed money is always looking for returns, and even a weak company in a fiat money printing spree will attract money. As long as there's a perception that there will be more investors, the speculative bubble will keep pumping. Profit becomes secondary to the narrative or perception. Something popular will attract more printed money than something profitable. Valuation will not reflect profitability, but popularity. Profit will only marginally make something more popular and is thus not a priority. This is why so many startups in the past 20 years have been so focused on retail. Retail investors being like normal, everyday people investing in the market. Perception of growth is more important than profit when selling equity to cantillionaires. To attract retail, companies offer subsidized goods and services, but the discount comes through dollar expansion. The game is not about providing a good service, but about attracting more newly printed money. And why do investors put money in? Because keeping it in dollars is a melting ice cube. Every company is competing, not to make good products and services, but to be the best store of value. If the asset inflation we're seeing is funded by dollar expansion, we have to start asking some tough questions about where the insane valuations we are seeing come from. Ultimately, all dollar expansion is theft from current dollar holders. Many of the holders are some of the poorest and most vulnerable people in the world, such as the people suffering from hyperinflation. The dollar is their refuge currency. Startups are as much the cantillion winners as Wall Street investment bankers are. Everything about them, including the below-cost goods and services, the sweet perks, and large salaries, are ultimately subsidized by newly printed money. This article goes on, but we're gonna barrel through this because this is all really important. The biggest companies of the last 20 years have something in common. They are really popular at a retail level. It's relatively rare to see B2B companies, business-to-business companies, make it big anymore because they don't have enough retail mindshare to really make it big. The fact that the biggest companies in the world, such as Tesla, Amazon, Apple, Google, and Facebook, are also household names is not an accident. The narrative around the companies is more important than the actual profits they make because they're competing to be stores of value. Think about Uber, Netflix, or Snapchat. These are all companies that have some level of mindshare in the retail investor's mind. That mindshare translates to more investor demand in the company that will create a higher stock price faster than profits. Perception is part of these companies' DNA. Their market caps reflect just how much people think they will attract new money, not how much value they add. Because their stock prices are so dependent on public perception, they become much more political and spend lots of money on public relations. This is unsurprising because that's how all these companies grew up. Startups these days are largely not funded through savings, but through venture capital. Even from the start, most startups are in money magnet mode instead of profit mode. To attract investment, they have to play political games. The dirty secret of venture capital firms is that most of them do very little due diligence. They pile into what everyone else is investing in. The author calls them monetary aristocrats because their role is very much political. Their main skill is in getting in on hot deals rather than finding innovative new ideas that change the economy. VC firms do this because getting in on hot deals is a good indicator of what will be popular and attract money in the future. If it can attract money from cantillionaires now, it's likely to attract money in the future. Popularity is what matters because newly printed money is way more important than a good business model or even profit. So what do VCs choose startups based on? It's not really about making money anymore, but about who can attract further investment. Thus, the story or the narrative around the company is more important than any profit. Perception, even if built on smoke and mirrors, is more important than the fundamental underlying business. The whole thing is a game of image. That explains so much about Amazon. For a while, I've wondered how Jeff Bezos got away with running a company that was hardly ever profitable, maybe 1 or 2 years in its 20-some year existence. Well, it's because he's able to tell a good story. Of course, most of these startups fail, and therein lies the rub. Capital, most of it newly printed, is wasted on trying to make these companies into unicorns. Even the unicorns are really just substituting as a store of value and have inflated valuations because of the dollar's poor record. If this sounds familiar, it should. This is how altcoins operate. And these altcoins are basically cryptocurrencies other than Bitcoin. Altcoins tend to be connected to decentralized applications like Ethereum. It's a platform, or whatever, like decentralized blockchain-based app. There's usually like a native cryptocurrency that runs on it. And you got to treat altcoins like startups, like tech startups, rather than actual money, like Bitcoin can be. So this is how altcoins operate. It's not a coincidence that they follow the startup formula so closely. Hype, 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 and hope to become a store of value while giving lip service to some utility. In a sense, altcoins are a pure version of the game startups have been playing all along. Their attempts at capturing the newly printed money. Now we come to why Bitcoin is, different and why it's the answer. The good news is that with Bitcoin, we have hard money again. Once money is scarce, all these speculative games become worse propositions. Every equity is competing to be a store of value, but a much better store of value is here. Why store value in an equity that's asset inflated when you have something much better in Bitcoin? Investment becomes much more competitive again, and the high startup failure rates we see now will not be tolerated. Startups that attract investment will be based on profits, not their ability to attract more investments. Startups will need to make money right away and pay out dividends to justify investment under a Bitcoin standard. Many will not have investors at all, but will be 100% owned by the people who started the company. Capital will come from savings, which have an opportunity cost, rather than fiat loans, which don't. That means much healthier businesses with positive cash flows from the start instead of expand now and profit later mentality of so many startups today. In the meantime, we're in a weird in-between state where there are many Bitcoin startups that operate on the fiat model. These are the first businesses that will need to transition to a more rational model of positive cash flow since they're being complete directly with Bitcoin. This is how Bitcoin fixes the economy, one company at a time. So you got to think of Bitcoin as sound money, not fiat money, which can be printed out of thin air. There's 19 million Bitcoin right now, and there will only ever be 21 million. That's when the Bitcoin software stops generating new Bitcoin. Each Bitcoin is divided by 8 decimal points. So right now you can buy as little or as much as you want with dollars, but you really got to think of Bitcoin as digital gold rather than a tech startup or a company. It's like a commodity. It's like digital earth. People used gold and silver as money. And paper money was simply, you know, a rain check, meaning that you had gold in the bank. There were a few big events in American history in the 20th century that really brought us to the fiat system that we're in today. First was the creation of the Federal Reserve, which I mentioned. Third was in during the Great Depression when FDR nationalized America's gold supply. Like he and government made it illegal for private citizens to own gold. It all went into Fort Knox. The next big event was at the end of World War II. That was the Bretton Woods Agreement, when several of the nations of the world met at in Bretton Woods and decided that the U.S. dollar would be the world's reserve currency, because the U.S. really hadn't been hurt that bad by the war. Then for a while, things were okay. The 50s and 60s were a big boom period for the American economy. And then in 1971, after a bunch of spending by Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon was forced to take the dollar off the gold standard and switch to a fiat system of money. And so many, you know, other countries have had to do that as well. A lot of other countries have been taken over by their own central banks. And a lot of them are dependent on the U.S. Federal Reserve because the dollar is the reserve currency. So that's that's the situation we're in. And that situation can only last so many decades. And we're coming to the end of that system. We're coming to the end of the fiat system, the fiat currency model. So we're either going to have to go back to a gold standard, adopt more Bitcoin, and use Bitcoin as our money, or we're going to do what the deep state New World Order wants and switch to a central bank digital currency, which would be a nightmare scenario because central bank digital currencies are controlled by governments. They're controlled centrally. And if the government doesn't like your politics, just like if the big tech platform doesn't like your comments, they can turn you off. They can erase your money. So we want to be on the side of gold and Bitcoin. And before we go further, I want to tell you about one of my affiliate services that I promote, and that is Uphold. Uphold.com is a very, you know, beginner-friendly cryptocurrency exchange. It's the one I use for most of my, you know, Bitcoin trading and investing. What's very important is they just put out a statement. They never lend out your money. Not like, you know, Celsius or some of the other exchanges. So you can buy cryptocurrency, you can invest in precious metals. Also, you can also invest in certain stocks. And just be careful which stocks you're gonna, you know, invest in. Maybe not the tech stocks right away, maybe some of the traditional ones that offer dividends. And it makes it very easy to invest as little or as much as you want in dollars or the currency in your country. And I've got the referral link in the description of this video or this podcast. Click on it and I'll get a referral. I'll get an affiliate commission, and it'll help yourself too. So please take advantage. So as we move on, we need to talk about debt, because debt and lending and leverage has wrecked, you know, the crypto markets and the stock market, but it's going to wreck a lot more. coming back to Bitcoin Magazine, the brewing emerging market debt crises. So as the Federal Reserve, who holds sole control over the monetary policy of the world reserve currency, continues to tighten monetary policy of the U.S. dollar, the global economy has begun to break as a result, being hit with a strong dollar and soaring commodity prices in tandem. And there's a chart here. We can look to the U.S. dollar index, or the DXY for short, which measures a weighted basket of fiat currencies against the dollar. It has soared to decade highs. Comparing the DXY year-over-year change with Bitcoin, we can clearly see market periods throughout Bitcoin's history that coincide with rising and falling dollar strength. And there's a chart here. The dark line is the DXY. The light blue line is the value of Bitcoin. And you can see there's an inverse correlation between Bitcoin and the DXY. So while the adoption of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency more broadly has its own native adoption curve, cyclical bubbles and bursts can be thought to be both enabled and subsequently crashed by the ebbs and flows of central bank monetary policy dovishness and hawkishness. So, skipping ahead, according to Bloomberg, there's nearly $250 billion worth of emerging market debt that is trading in distress, accounting for approximately 17% of all emerging market debt denominated in dollars, euros, or yen. As Bitcoin cryptocurrency natives know all too well in recent months, the default of one counterparty is only isolated in theory, and in practice, the third, second order effects are seemingly impossible to know beforehand. So, we've seen certain cryptocurrency exchanges like Celsius and hedge funds like 3Arrows Capital go bankrupt. Well, a few countries are going to start going bankrupt. And the first one you probably heard of is Sri Lanka. You've been wondering what their the national crisis in Sri Lanka is, why the people have ousted the president. It's because the government there spent the country into oblivion. They had so many social welfare programs going on and public projects that they ran up the credit card so bad, borrowing from the central bank and also some other wealthier countries, that they defaulted. And this article from The Guardian says, Sri Lanka is the first domino to fall in the face of a global debt crisis. So, and this is all because all these countries use central banks. They're basically indebted. They're basically stuck in a cycle of debt. They don't have sound money. So, let's see here. There are currently 107 countries facing at least one of three shocks: rising food prices, rising energy prices, or tighter financial conditions. All three shocks are being faced by 69 countries, 25 in Africa, 25 in Asia and the Pacific, and 19 in Latin America and the Pacific. So the list of countries that look vulnerable is long and varied. The International Monetary Fund has opened rescue talks with Egypt and Tunisia, who are both big wheat importers from Russia and Ukraine, and with Pakistan, which has imposed power cuts because of the high cost of imported energy. Sub-Saharan African countries are being carefully watched include Ghana, Kenya, South Africa, and Ethiopia. Argentina and South America recently signed a $45 billion debt deal with the IMF, but other Latin American countries at risk include El Salvador and Peru. We know about El Salvador because they're going big on Bitcoin. And recently they hosted a lot of other countries, developing countries, at a conference to talk about Bitcoin and its benefits. So now, whether you invest in Bitcoin or use it as money, which is what we'll probably be doing in the future, there is some good news and some bullish news. It might not happen right away, but it's good news for adoption and good news for it becoming mainstream. So I heard about this story last week through a CryptoZombies channel. The Prince of Serbia claims unnamed Arab nation on the verge of adopting Bitcoin And he talks about, you know, certain Arab countries that are governed by monarchies, by kings, they tend to follow, you know, Muslim law, Sharia law, more closely than the ones than the Arab, than the Middle Eastern countries that aren't ruled by monarchies. And they have a very, you know, strong animus against lending money and charging interest. The Quran specifically forbids charging money, loaning money and interest. What's notable is that the Bible does this too. And we've just ignored that for at least a century. So the prince of Serbia is saying that, yeah, countries that are ruled by monarchies tend to have a more sound monetary policy, and they're just looking for sound money to go with it. And so they are very likely to start adopting Bitcoin and investing in buying it and using it in their sovereign wealth funds. That'll raise the price of Bitcoin up considerably. Another thing that will raise the price of Bitcoin considerably is this development by the Bank of International Settlements. This is from finbold.com. Despite its skeptical approach to digital currencies, exacerbated by the recent cryptocurrency market crash, it looks like the Bank for International Settlements intends to extend its hand to the new asset class by allowing banks to hold up to 1% of reserves in cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin. Indeed, the BIS's Basel Committee on Banking Supervision has made the proposal for limiting the bank's total exposures to Group 2 crypto assets to 1% of Tier 1 capital. That's kind of a funny way of saying of, hey, put 1% of your assets, money in assets. Now, they consider Bitcoin to be an asset, which is true right now, the same way gold is an asset. We used to use gold as money, but after 1971, when the dollar was taken off of gold, it became an asset that you can invest in. You know, a few years after 1971, it became legal for Americans to buy and sell gold again. So right now we're treating Bitcoin like we would gold. So some people use it as an asset, some people use it as money. What we really need to think of, Bitcoin is hard, is a hard asset, it's a hard form of currency that's not controlled by any central government or any central organization, and it's made secure by its cryptography, by its code. So that's really the benefit of Bitcoin. And we're going to wrap this video up with another fun article. This is from Cointelegraph, titled, "What Bear Market? Consumer confidence is higher among crypto owners than normies." A research firm said that the discrepancy is partially explained by the fact that the average crypto owner is more likely to be wealthier, younger, and male than the average U.S. adult. However, they're younger because they're more hip on technology, and they're wealthier probably because they've invested in crypto. So I've invested in crypto, and I can tell you, I'm not that nervous about my personal finances. You know, I'm hustling, I'm working, but I'm as confident as I've ever been. So kind of take this as a good sign that this is something you need to take advantage of to park your money, or actually gain something that's going to be real money in the near future, as the whole debt-based, interest-based fiat system starts dissolving. And it will start dissolving once we elect some true economic conservatives into a government and we start auditing the central banks. So keep a stiff upper lip, everyone. Things look bad now, but we're kind of going in this in-between phase. So I'll let you go. Again, take advantage of Uphold. It makes it super easy to invest in Bitcoin. Bitcoin's the big one. Also, gold and silver. They let you invest in real gold and silver, not the paper contracts that a lot of other firms kind of push on people. Also, click on the link to my website or any of the other referral links in the description and take advantage of some cool resources and services that I hope will help your business or your household. I'm Nate Houseman, and I'm signing off. I want to let you know, it's okay to stand up for yourself. Have a good one.